Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to The Drive Time. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio right now are Hilary Vili, Gloria Peter-Matthes. I know I haven't pronounced that correctly. I know she's going to kill me for this. They're with a group here in Northumberland called Better Together, a refugee sponsorship group. Also in the studio with us this afternoon is Rob Washburn. Before we get to that, we're going to play this again. This is Rick Mercer from Tuesday, folks.
The Syrian refugee crisis is not the first time Canada has faced something like this. We've done this many times in the past 100 years. Every crisis, of course, is different, but they all have just one thing in common. Refugees, desperate people with nowhere to go, what to do with them. And there's always a huge debate. It is never black and white. More often than not, it's a sea of gray. Well, imagine for a moment you're walking along the shore next to this sea of gray, and you look out and you see someone drowning 50 feet from shore. The question is, do you throw him the rope? And yes, you have a rope. Of course you'll throw him the rope. But just when you're about to do it, a crowd appears and someone says, hey, wait, what do you know about that guy in the water? And the truth is, you know nothing other than the drowning part. At which point someone says, how do you even know he's drowning? Good question. He certainly looks like he's drowning. At which point, a town car pulls up and out pops a well-dressed man who says, for the record, I have nothing against throwing the guy a rope, but what's with this arbitrary deadline? What is the rush? That sets off a heated debate. So heated, in fact, by the time it's over, the guy in the water is underwater. The upside is, no rope got wet. Look, Canada has been here before. In 1979, we accepted 60,000 Vietnamese boat people. That's us, being the good guys. But in 1939, we said no to a ship carrying 960 Jews. We sent them back to Europe. Many perished in concentration camps. That, too, is part of our history. And that's why it's so important we get this one right. It's 2015. Welcome to Canada.
And that was Rick Mercer, this week's rant from the Mercer Report. And I want to thank Rick's communications person, David McConnell, for sending these to us every week. Very poignant, given the conversation we're about to enter into. We are talking to two women here who are from the, the Coburg Alliance Church? The Coburg Alliance Church. And they are here today because they are working with a number of other groups here in, as a number of other groups are here in Northumberland, Peterborough South, to bring refugees here to Northumberland, Peterborough South, specifically to the Coburg area. The group they're working with is called Better Together Refugee Sponsorship. Ladies, welcome. Thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Thank you.
Very glad to have the pair of you here. What was the first thing that ignited your desire to help refugees?
It kind of started last winter when there were three individuals completely independent of each other from three different churches that kind of had the idea at the same time. And it actually might have been the same week in January that the three of us went to our pastors, completely independent of each other, and said, what do you think of the idea of sponsoring a refugee family? And those three pastors connected with the three other pastors that they are part of in a ministerial group. And the six pastors of the six churches decided to do this Better Together refugee sponsorship project. And they committed at that time to three to five families. And since then, two more churches have come on board, one from Port Hope, and we are sponsoring five to six families now.
Wow, 5 to 6 families. That is that, now that seems like a large number of people. When you look at the number of people living in refugee camps, though, that's really less than a drop in the bucket, isn't it?
Yeah.
So this wasn't motivated by the death of that little boy then on the beaches of Syria.
No, this was started well before that.
How has the response been so far? I mean, is this something that everyone has kind of gotten behind?
The response has been amazing, overwhelming. It's over the summer, we were just really getting started putting together teams and just kind of getting word out to the churches about what we were planning to do. And word seemed to get out to the community before we even deliberately did that. And I was getting emails and phone calls from people in the community that heard from their brother's cousin, sister who went to that church, you know, next door to whatever, you know, those kinds of stories, saying, we want to be involved. In September, early September, again, before anything went out publicly, a local businessman heard about it and said, I've got some warehouse space that I'd like to donate for your use to store furniture and things like that if you start collecting that. And we hadn't asked. We weren't even in a position to do that yet. And 2 days later, I got an email from, again, from somebody I didn't even know saying, we have some furniture to donate. Could you use it? And I thought, oh, that's why we needed the storage space when we did.
Exactly.
So our storage space now is almost full. There's a number of items that we don't need any more of. We have a donation team that's working on organizing that. So that's one huge response from the public. We've got a database that's full of people that have called or emailed and said, I want to be involved somehow. Some people with specific things, like I'm an IT person or I'm a counselor or I can drive people to appointments or all kinds of different things. So our database is full of people that can do all kinds of things from the community at large. We have core teams that are working on the settlement plans that are not just people from the church. Community people wanted to come on board the core teams. We've got representation from the Port Hope Community Health Center, from the Help Center, from Rotary. All kinds of different people from the community.
So this is just before you get started on this. I mean, there's a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of government hurdles, obviously. And sounds to me like all of this has sort of steamrolled even before you have initiated that paperwork process. How difficult was it to sort of, because obviously you're going to have to slam the brakes on as we move, or at least slow down while you initiate the paperwork process?
Yeah, so in order to sponsor a family, we have to go under a sponsorship agreement holder. So for our group, we're going under the Christian and Missionary Alliance denomination in Canada. They have an arm called Justice and Compassion.
Okay.
And so we apply to sponsor families under them. Now, what we need to do is show them that we are prepared to sponsor a family by submitting a settlement plan, which includes basically anything and everything that would be needed to sponsor a family, all put in place, a budget. We need to secure those funds in advance, and then we submit that when we're ready. So basically, we've been in the process of really gathering that support, getting those teams in place, and then as soon as we raise the funds that we need, we're good to go to submit that.
So what then, could you maybe be a little bit more specific? Let's talk about, first of all, you talked about money. So how much money has to be raised to sponsor these five families?
We need to raise, we've done kind of an analysis of the cost of living in the Cobourg-Port Hope area.
Mm-hmm.
And based on that analysis, we are asking to raise about $34,000 per family that we sponsor. So the number for 5 to 6 families, we're looking to raise $200,000 within our project.
Okay, and that is a lot of money. Now, that money is coming primarily from the churches then, or is it coming, are you getting bulk donations from, you know, you mentioned Rotary. What kind of support are you getting outside of the church?
It's really a partnership, as you said. So the churches, organizations in the community, individuals, and just everyone really giving what they can. We've really seen just a response of people saying, what can I do? And this is a local initiative, and so people want to get involved with it because it's something they can feel they can really be a part of.
So what about other logistics like housing and transportation? Could you talk a little bit about how you're putting those aspects of the plan together?
Those are all part of the settlement plans that the core teams are working on. Housing, I think, is probably going to be one of our biggest challenges. And ideally, what would happen is when the families arrive, we will have temporary housing for them so that they can actually be involved in the process of finding a place for themselves to live, so that they can have some choice in that. Again, housing is a difficult thing in the area, so that will be a challenge, but we're trusting that that will happen.
Now, what are some of the things that you have to take into account that most people might not think you have to take into account? Little details that you've discovered that you got to go like, holy cow, I have to look after this as well. What are some of those things?
Well, some of the things, maybe some people would already consider this when it comes to sponsoring, but things like we need to provide the family with a workable budget and talk to them and just really try to communicate, this is what we are asking you to work within, and just kind of explaining, you know, this is how to budget. Another thing is just really helping them acclimatize to life in Northumberland. So here's our grocery stores. Here's recreation opportunities. Here's, you know, public transportation. Other things that the settlement teams will be walking with the families through is applying for their social insurance number, their health card, Canada Child Benefits, if applicable. Another thing would be, again, as Gloria mentioned, setting them up with health care. So we've had doctors, dentists, and the Port Hope Community Health Center step forward and say we're prepared to offer those things to the families for the duration of their sponsorship here. Other things like school registration, ESL classes.
What do we know? Do we know anything about the families? I mean, do you get to choose who the families are, or do they just say to you, okay, you've got enough money for five families, these are the five families? I mean, is there a process where you sort of get a pre-connection with the families before they come here?
Yeah, there's different ways of sponsoring. We are going the route of blended visa office referred. So okay. What that means is a couple things. One is that the government will help financially, and we can talk about that in a minute if you want. But the other thing is that there's a number of refugees that come in under different types of sponsorship. So there will be a list on the blended visa office referred way of sponsoring that we will have access to when we're ready to mm-hmm. look at that list. So then when we go through that list, we will have a choice. There's not a lot of information on the list. It'll be sort of the makeup of the family, you know, mom, dad, and a three-year-old and a four-year-old, daughters or whatever, what country they're from, where they are now, and possibly some information on their occupation, but pretty much that's about all we'll get.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the occupation, because one of the things that first comes to mind when people think about refugees is, oh, well, what kind of people are we getting? And for the most part, and this is fact from the UNHCR, is that these are people who, for the most part, are educated. I mean, they had a 70 to 85% literacy rate in Syria. That was the literacy rate in the country. So we're not talking about people who are coming here who are going to be completely in the dark. These are, for the most part, educated people. Some of them are professionals. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, when we're talking about budgets, for instance, I mean, a lot of them, when they come here, have probably already made those thoughts already, right?
Probably, yeah, yeah. Yeah, and they're all... They're people like us, you mm-hmm. know. They're teachers and doctors and mm-hmm. like our neighbors, like our aunts and uncles. So they're just like us. They've just fallen on some really tough times.
Well, I think that's a good point to make when we talk about refugees, to remind people that they are just like us. I mean, right now they're living in a camp, and it's not their choice. They would much rather be, as I said earlier today, having their kids go to school. Mom gets up and goes to work, and dad goes to work. What have you? They were living normal lives until all of a sudden their nation fell apart. So this is something we need to think about when we're talking about refugees, because the one thing you hear about all the time, and since, I mean, even when the Prime Minister was campaigning, talking about bringing refugees here, was this idea of a security threat, right? And, you know, for some reason, people have it in the back of their minds that, you know, terrorists are hiding in these refugee camps just waiting for an opportunity. Some of them waiting as long as 4 years, apparently, for an opportunity to come here and perform something nefarious. Obviously, that's not what we're dealing with here, right?
No.
I'm really curious about when a family comes to a rural area. I think it's a lot different than maybe going to a city. What are some of the special considerations you've had to give because we are a rural community?
From the very beginning, initially, when I first thought of it, I thought, let's bring in a family. But when it started getting bigger, the whole point of bringing in more than one family was so that there would be a bit of a community for them when they got here. So mm-hmm. we were thinking about that right from the beginning. But like you said, it's a rural area. There's not the same kind of resources and community that would be in a big city. However, the New Canadian Centre in Peterborough and Cobourg have been putting together a whole slew of resources. And there are other organizations that are bringing in families. So there are going to be more than just our families in the community. And the resources are being built up because of the numbers coming in.
Can you give us a bit of an idea of when you talk about these resources, what are the sorts of things that we're talking about?
Well, one of the things that they're working on right now is a list of temporary housing so that anybody who's doing a sponsorship can go to their site and they can find, you know, a list of this of temporary housing for their families as they come. So that's one of the things. Another thing that they are doing is connecting all the different, having a network of all the different groups so that, let's say, we find out some information. For example, just recently, just this week, we heard from Wraparound, and they want to support our families. And so I asked, can we share that with the network? And they said, absolutely. So Wraparound is willing to help all the families that are coming in. So any group that finds out a resource, they can put it on this network so that all the groups can access.
Well, we're going to take our first break of the hour. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. This is Canada's only holistic political chat. My guests in the studio are Hilary Vili and Gloria Peters Matthews, and they are with a group called Better Together Refugee Sponsorships here in Northumberland County. Also in the studio, Rob Washburn. We will be right back, so please stick around. And welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm Dave Glover. With me are Hilary Vili, Gloria Peters-Matthews, and Rob Washburn. We are talking about refugees here in Northumberland County. I guess we should start to talk about some of the costings, you know, because today there was another announcement made today of an additional $100 million, which the federal government has committed to the UNHCR. Of that $100 million, $10 million of it is going to be going towards this refugee placement program that the government is offering. And so they're working with communities. How does that work for you guys in terms of access to federal funding or funding period, frankly?
Right. So as we said, we are going through the Blended Visa Office Referred Program. And so the way that that is set up is that the government offers 6 months of income support to the families through if a group sponsors them. So basically, we apply for that as soon as they arrive, mm-hmm. and that money is given directly to the families. It looks at this time like it'll be equivalent to social assistance rates. So for 6 months, they would be looking at receiving over the course of 6 months around $8,000.
Okay.
And that's in addition to the $35,000 that you're raising. So they're going to have about $42,000, $45,000 to live on for a year.
Correct. And part of our reasoning for that is we want to make sure that as a church community and also as a community as a whole, that we're really coming alongside to give the best that we can and to really help get these people on their feet. The goal and the aim is to truly empower them, mm-hmm. So that they feel a sense of independence at the end of this year. But we really feel that part of that support is a sufficient amount of practical monetary support for that year.
Right. Well, and of course, the last thing that any of the provincial governments want is for there to be an additional financial burden. I mean, that's the one pushback you're hearing from people all the time, right? Is, oh, well, that's great. You know, we barely have enough money to afford programming now. Where are we going to get this money from? But, you know, like Rick Mercer said, you know, do you deny a drowning man a rope because you're concerned about what's going to happen when that person comes ashore? Or do you get that person ashore and then, you know, help them proceed from there? I think the latter is definitely true.
Absolutely.
Rob?
No, I think you're absolutely right. So what's been going on then in terms of the process right now that's taking place overseas? I understand that there's screening going on overseas. And I understand that the United Nations has its own set of criteria as well that sort of helps determine who these people are and how much do those things cost. So I know, for example, that it's a five-step process. First of all, they identify the refugees that are eligible for resettlement. And that program runs at about $17 million to $21 million. Then they determine the health and the security screening. So they go through and they find out. And I understand, is it correct that a lot of these people come over and they, because of the living conditions, they come here with medical and health issues. And you were saying earlier that there's a pro uh, p-
people who are stepping forward already to do that, to help with those kinds of things. What are you hearing about that aspect of it?
One of the things that we have heard from sponsorship groups that have gone before us is that health concerns and dental concerns and emotional support is something that definitely comes up again and again. So it really is, the onus is on the sponsorship group to really make sure that those supports are in place so that they can be accessed easily by the families and they can be encouraged to use them.
So what kind of supports then, when we're talking about once they're here and they sort of get settled down, what sort of programs are going to be taking place over the year to, again, make them feel at home and interacting and supported?
So one of the, in terms of the health, the Port Hope Community Health Center has really gotten on board, and they have trauma counseling as well to help with that. Mm-hmm. Somebody else on our database said that she would really love to sort of plan some events or parties or some sort of event to bring all the groups together. So there's those kinds of things in the works. Also, the New Canadian Centre, it's a huge resource. They have already established groups and events and things on a weekly basis and on a monthly basis that the families can get involved in. The YMCA will be a big thing for the families to go, and there's already somebody who said that they will take care of passes for the families. So there's just a lot of different things, and part of those kinds of things are part of the settlement planning in advance as well.
Is there one particular person or individual or family that actually hooks up with the refugee family so that there's that kind of relationship too? Because everything you've talked about so far is institutional and sort of the group.
Right, yes.
But how about on an individual basis?
Yeah, so each family has its own core settlement team that's working on the plan right now. And our core settlement teams are 6 to 8 people, and those are the connecting people for the family. And probably within those 6 to 8 people, it would probably be maybe 3 of them that will be the really central people so that the families aren't overwhelmed with 50 people wanting to do 50 different things with them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I know this sounds really fundamental, but how do you talk to these people?
In terms of language?
In terms of language,
I'm sorry. Is there a language barrier?
Yeah, I was just going to say.
Is there a language barrier, though?
Yeah, so there will be a language barrier. We don't at this point know how much of a language barrier because some of them have English, some of them have a lot of English, some of them have very little. Mm-hmm. We have a couple of interpreters that have stepped up and volunteered to help us out, plus the other families that have come before hopefully will be able to help with that. In terms of culture, that's one thing that we're going to have to learn about. We've heard that oftentimes they will agree to things because they want to please us. So we have to be very careful and learn about their culture before they come so that we're not asking them to do things and having them do them because they want to please us rather than really being honest with us.
Well, and part of that, I guess, has to do with the fact that they're being sponsored here and they want to ensure that they don't tick off their sponsors for some reason somehow, which was probably impossible at this point. I guess one of the things that, you know, you talked about some of the issues they're going to face. One of the biggest issues, of course, is mental health issues. We're talking about people who have been traumatized that are probably living with PTSD at the very least, their children as well. Has there been a thought within your group? And when I know you're talking about bringing them together to enjoy life and to introduce them to life in Northumberland and maybe hosting events. But has there been any discussion perhaps around the mental health aspect and maybe creating a group, a community where they can get together and talk amongst themselves about what they're going through in terms of that group therapy? Has there been anyone in the community to say, okay, I'm going to step up and help with that?
We have a group of people connected with the health field that are actually putting together a list of different medical and health resources, including trauma care. And there has been a lot of discussion. Nothing has been concretely planned, but there has been a lot of discussion about how to address that. And there will be some training for our core teams before they come around that as well. We've got someone who has done some training in that is working on putting together something for that now.
In cultural terms, though, it's going to be such a huge shift to come from where they are to here. One of the things, and Dave mentioned this in some of the things that you've been saying, about religious needs in our community, and how are those things going to be met?
Right. So it's not for sure that they will be Muslim families, but it's quite likely. And there is an established Muslim community, small, but there is in the Coburg area, and there is a place in town where they gather to worship, and there is the mosque in Peterborough. So we will get them connected. That is part of the plan that the groups are working on to make sure that they are able to be connected.
Well, on that note, we're going to take our second break of the hour. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. I should let the listeners know our guests today in the studio are Hilary Veely, Gloria Peters-Matthies. They are with a group from the area called Better Together Refugee Sponsorship, and they are part of a larger network of Christian Alliance churches here in the community, as well as other faith-based groups. Rob Washburn, of course, professor of e-journalism from Loyalist College. I'm Dave Glover. You will you stay around. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. I'm your host, Dave Glover. Joining me in the studio, as I said, Hilary Veely, Gloria Peters-Matthies, and Rob Washburn. We're discussing refugees, refugee resettlement. And we're talking about refugees, but we're also, I want to remind people, something we talked about during the break, is this is about humanity here, right? I mean, it's easy to refer to people in that distant thought as a refugee. But when you humanize these people, when you talk about the fact that, you know, something else we talked about during the break is, you know, the people that are the poorest of the poor in Syria, quite frankly, are still trapped. They could not afford to get out. So we're talking about people who, for the most part, had some type of life, you know, something successful that they were enjoying. And the goal really for them is to get a little respite here, a refuge, if you will. But ultimately, they really want to go home. They really want to be able to go back home. Is that something you guys are prepared to deal with? Is the fact that they're going to be coming here? They may not plan for a long time in Canada. Maybe their goal would be to plan for 1 year and hopefully at the end of the year be able to go back home. Is that something you folks have talked about at all?
Well, absolutely. Our goal is to do what is best for the families. And we've talked even about what happens if they come to Coburg and they find it such a small town that they, you know, 3 months later, they move to a bigger center. How mm-hmm. would we feel about that? We've talked through that as groups. So if they decide they want to go back, like if, you know, Syria becomes a safe place again for them to go home to and they want to, then absolutely, we would support that all the way.
I think one of the subtexts, though, of what you're saying, Dave, is that there's a lot of misinformation out there. And I know
Absolutely.
That there's been there was a poll done that was published in the mainstream media. And one of the things that came out of it was just over half or around 51% of those surveyed in the poll said they disapproved of the government's plan to settle 25,000 Syrian refugees in Canada.
But that was by the end of this year.
But yeah, by the end of the year. But, I mean, we're just talking about the idea of bringing in this many refugees mm-hmm. and people feeling rather negative about it. I'm just wondering, what has been your experience in the community? Have you had any pushback or backlash, or have there been any comments?
I would say, by and large, the response that we've received has been overwhelmingly positive, that people just want to know, how can I help? I would say, honestly, there have been two people who have approached us, taken the time to approach and say, you know, we really disagree. Mm-hmm. But honestly, two people out of an entire community, that's pretty overwhelming. Mm-hmm. That, yeah, people are supporting this.
So we're not seeing any of that Islamophobia backlash. And I should point out, I mean, we've had a number of incidents in Toronto where women were accosted, one assaulted, and we did have the fire in the mosque. Realistically, in Canada, that's sort of been it, though. I mean, there was an incident, I think, in Calgary where a mosque was defaced. It wasn't set on fire, and a couple of situations similar in Quebec. But for the most part, across this country, the support has been pretty overwhelming.
I would say so. And we can't forget that people may still hold views that maybe they talk about, you know, around their kitchen tables or mm-hmm. at home that maybe they wouldn't express publicly, mm-hmm. but that they still would share those concerns maybe with close friends or family. So it's really important that we get a message out there that, you know, these people are just like us. It really, as you said, Dave, is about humanity. And it's about doing the right thing, helping someone in a time of need.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, throughout this process, it must be an incredible learning curve. What are some of the things that you're walking away that you've learned by being involved in this? I'd like you each to answer that.
That's a great question. As you said, it has been quite a learning curve. I mean, I think for me, one of the biggest things has been just the process of what it means to sponsor. Just getting immersed in the language of even just the Canadian government and what they require, what our sponsorship agreement holder requires, and just being, yeah, knowledgeable about that so we can really walk our teams through this process and hopefully make a smooth transition for these families ultimately.
Yeah, I would agree that that's a big one as well. Also for me would be just the logistics of mobilizing so many people and organizing so many people and keeping so many people in the loop, especially with when information is changing all the time and just, you know, moving forward as quickly as we can when some people say, we're going too slow. We need to do this quicker, and we're going as fast as we can. And so the expectations that people have, you know, we've got you know 40 or 50 people on our core teams with 40 or 50 different sets of expectations. So just kind of keeping the groups together.
That was another aspect that I'd like to explore for just a second, and that is there's so many people that want to help, and there are also different organizations that are part of this coalition that's come together to do this. Mm-hmm. And yet I've read in the media that there's a woman in Port Hope, I think, that's trying to do some things. How do we understand how all of these groups work so that we know who we're trying to help and who we're donating to? Is there just one central thing, or are there multiple groups out there?
There are multiple groups out there, and I can't speak about the other groups. I don't know exactly mm-hmm. who they are, all of them are, and exactly what they're doing. In terms of fundraising and donating, each group is doing their own thing. But in terms of resources, like I mentioned before, the New Canadian Center is putting together sort of an umbrella list of resources that we can all access.
Okay, so I guess, and that then becomes something that I wonder if people will be concerned about, because you've mentioned Rotary is one group. You've talked about a number of churches. We haven't identified all of those. If there are these other groups, how do I, as if I'm keen to be involved and keen to help out, where should I be putting my dollars and my resources so that I feel I'm getting the best bang for my buck and the best use of my time?
That's a great question. We have put together a website. It's called bettertogetherpartnership.org. Mm-hmm. And anybody interested in volunteering, in donating, in learning more about the sponsorship process or how they can be involved can go there and basically contact us and learn more about what our group is doing. Obviously, the onus would be on the individual to really search out maybe the different groups that are doing this great work in Northumberland and see what maybe best fits with their values and goals and how they're going about it. I've been really impressed just at the collaboration, though, of the groups that are coming together. And maybe they're going about it in slightly different ways from a fundraising standpoint. We really appreciate that this is kind of a larger collective and that partnership aspect. But really, we've had many people reach out and say, how can we, once the families are here, really create that community for them and really all work together?
Mm-hmm. Well, as you said, though, you've been at this for well over a year. I mean, you started doing this before the whole thing became, if you will, a quote-unquote media crisis. How has it changed since a year ago?
Well, I think since that picture of the little boy, the media has picked it up hugely. Mm-hmm. And things were, from sort of January till sometime in the summer, things were very slow getting going. And, you know, we were getting the word out there and people were interested, but just trying to pull together the teams was slow going. As soon as that picture came out and the media came out, everything speeded up. Everything sped up. So that's when the phone calls and the emails came en masse. Like, we were getting them every day. Offers of help, offers of support. Mm-hmm. I want to do this. I want to do that. So it's been a little bit of a challenge just kind of keeping up with all that.
How was working with the previous federal government, and do you expect it to be different under a new regime? I mean, one of the things that the Conservatives were known for, quite frankly, was foot dragging. You know, I mean, they had a process where members of the PMO were individually vetting refugees from the Prime Minister's office. I mean, nothing slows down a process more than an unwillingness on the part of the government. Was that a problem for you then, and do you expect that to have changed?
So it was the Conservative government that did bring in this blended visa office referred program. So mm-hmm. it was really interesting to see how, you know, that has been rolled into the Liberals' new plan. And we're really excited to see that that is being kept, obviously, because it's a great option for somebody who wants to attempt a private sponsor, but then also, yeah, have that government support. So, but it's been great to see how, yeah, that program is still available. It's still, we can access it. And Gloria, do you have any other?
I was just going to say that with both governments, what we've found is that things change.
Yes.
Right.
So, like, right from the beginning of our work, we would learn something, and then, you know, a week later or a month later, we'd learn that that's changed. I think especially as the crisis has hit the forefront of the mm-hmm. media. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter which government. It's just things are changing all the time.
We talked about preferred sponsorship. How is that different from a regular refugee, somebody who's coming here that's not sponsored? Are there different hurdles put in place for you as sponsors, or is there less are there less resources available for people who come here unsponsored? Do you know anything about that?
My understanding is that, so the visa office referred, they have been identified by the UNHCR as perhaps more at risk, more vulnerable, within a refugee camp. They've just been identified in that way. And so they are put on this list. They're on the list for 14 days. And then if at that time no sponsoring group comes forward to say we will take on this family, then they're converted into government sponsored. I mean, really, it's a benefit for a family to have a private sponsoring group behind them. It mm-hmm. truly is. They have not only that financial support, but they have really that emotional support, even the friendships that could develop between sponsoring groups and a family.
Access to networking.
Access to networks, exactly.
And you also know that the government-sponsored refugees will be going to places where there's mass housing. So they'll be going to the air bases and some of these other places where they get housed, and they're mm-hmm. sort of still processed on a very large scale, whereas this other program is very much an individualized type of program, so that the relationships can develop, and it's on sort of on a microcosm rather than on a macrocosm.
Is security a concern for you guys at all?
I would say no. We do trust that the proper screenings are taking place, and basically, really, at the end of the day, we just have to focus on doing what we feel we're called to do, and that's to do the right thing and to help others. And yeah.
Well, that's a great note. On that note, we're going to take our last break of the hour. When we come back, we're going to try and wrap all this together, folks. You are listening to The Drive Time right here on Northumberland 89.7. Keep your dial tuned right here. Welcome back to The Drive Time, everybody. Joining me in the studio are Hillary Vili, Gloria Peters-Matthews. They are with a group called Better Together Refugee Sponsorship. And you can actually follow them online, folks. I think they have a website here. I know they have a Facebook page, so you can get that information. Yeah, www.facebook.com/BetterTogetherCoburg. So that's the group on Facebook. You can follow them on Facebook. Find out what they're up to. And Rob Washburn, always when we have these great conversations, Rob is here in the studio with us as well. Rob, you have the next question.
Yeah, I do. You must have met so many people over the last little while. Who are some of the most memorable people you've met through this experience?
That's a good question. I think it's been really cool. Different people that have shown how excited they are to be a part of this project. I think, for example, of a person who is on one of our core teams. She also works at the Port Hope Community Health Center, and she just on her own went to her workplace and said, "What can we do?" And just got people on board. I think they want to do possibly some fundraising, or they want to offer support, medical support. And so she just kind of rallied her workplace behind us. I think of another person who isn't even part of one of our teams, but just is wanting to help, has independently gone out and gotten different support. For example, Boston Pizza. If anybody eats at Boston Pizza, on your bill, at the bottom of the bill, write Better Together Refugee Sponsorship, give it to your server, and the Boston Pizza will give us 10% of that. So he went out and did that. Just different people they just want to help, and if they know somebody, they'll just go and gather that support.
How about you?
I would definitely say it's been really fascinating to work with so many people. You just get lots of diverse personalities. And as Gloria said, really that unified vision is what's so exciting about this, is that you've got honestly, just so many different people, different backgrounds, even just different political views. But they are coming together and saying this is the right thing to do, and we want to be a part of this.
So, well, just as a quick FYI to the listeners out there, I just got this from CBC News. Canada has so far issued 928 permanent residency visas to Syrian refugees, but there's still no timeline for when they could start arriving, according to Immigration Minister John McCallum. That was part of the $100 million announcement as well.
Go ahead. I'm curious, too, a year from now, once they've arrived, once they've settled, a year from that date, what do you imagine it's going to be like? What picture do you have in your head for these people?
My hope would be that they have learned to adapt to our culture and to their new living arrangements and situation. My hope is that relationships are built between the core teams and the families that will carry on. My hope would be for the rest of their lives. We've heard stories of refugee sponsorships that like years and years and years later, when the kids grow up and get married, they invite their sponsorship team to come to the weddings and things like that. So my hope is that we have connections like that.
As well, I would just speak to, as we've mentioned earlier, just those mental health issues. And obviously a year is not enough time to resolve all of those issues. Mm-hmm. But truly, I mean, we enjoy incredible privilege here in Northumberland County, and just the privilege that we're not having bombs dropped on our heads. Mm-hmm. And that... I mean, obviously, I recognize that there's lots of different economic statuses around the county, but truly, we are blessed just to, have a roof over our heads, food to eat, our kids are safe. And honestly, that's my hope, that they would regain that sense of safety and security and be on the road to recovery, really, from that trauma.
Any idea when you'll know how and when these families you're sponsoring will be able to arrive here?
Once we have our settlement plans in place, the budget is ready, and our funding is in place, then we can make application for the families. And what we are hearing right now, and again, that has changed over the year and could change, but what we're hearing right now is the wait time is anywhere from about 1 month to 4 months by the time they arrive.
Okay. So they could conceivably be here then by March, for instance.
Sure.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So that's good news. I mean, it's good news for them and also good news for us here in Northumberland County as well, because let's face it, we need to share the wealth here, right? We've got a beautiful place here. I mean, I remember when I first came here, I don't know, 2001, and thought, my goodness, where has this place been? I grew up in Ontario, lived here my whole life. I've been to Niagara Falls and places west, but, you know, nobody comes east. And to find this jewel here in Northumberland and to be able to offer that now to families who are in desperation, I think it's a gift.
Mm-hmm. Can you just give us one last time, if somebody's interested, they're listening to the show, how can they reach out? How can they help?
So they can go to our website, which is www.bettertogetherpartnership.org. And there's all the information you need there, how to donate, how to get involved, what we're up to. And you can check back there for updates.
Okay. Gloria, anything from you? Last words?
You can also check the Facebook page, which will have similar information if you prefer to do that. And I just want to say a really big thank you to Northumberland County for the generous support of individuals, of businesses, of organizations, the county council. It's just been an exceptional response.
Mm-hmm. What's the next step for you guys, Nen? What is the next thing on your agenda at this point?
So the next thing is in very soon. Keep your eyes open for our official launch of our fundraising campaign. So we're on a mission to raise the money that we need, because once the funds are in place, the families get to come.
Right. Now, do you have to have all of the money in place for all of the families, or can you sponsor? I mean, you need $35,000 per family. So if you get $35,000, can the first family come in here and then so on?
Correct.
And so on and so on?
Yes. So that's how we're going to do it. As soon as the money is available and in the bank, we will submit that application, provided that the settlement teams are also ready.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, there you go, Rob.
Rock and roll.
Well, it sounds to me like you've definitely got something going on here. You're one of many groups, as you say, mm-hmm. Here in Northumberland, Peterborough South. Any talk of coordinating with the groups in the east and western, northern parts of this riding as well, or are you just focused primarily on what's happening right here in Cobourg?
Well, we find that we've got more than enough to do to focus on what we're doing. However, there are other groups. I just had a Skype meeting earlier this week with a group of pastors in Kitchener area, and there's another group of pastors in the Acton area that are also looking to do this. So we're quite open to talking with them about how we got started to help.
So it's
them.
Almost like sharing best practices.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Well, I want to thank you both for being here, and thanks, Rob, as well. My guests have been Hillary Veely and Gloria Peters-Matthews. They are with Better Together Refugee Sponsorship right here in Coburg. You can check out their website. You can check them out on Facebook as well. Here is Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers with Refugee. As we close out, stick around at 7 o'clock. Don't forget, the meerkat will be in the house. I have no idea what she's talking about today, but you will know at 7 o'clock.
About it.